Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall here from Stonehenge RTFO, and this is the night sky that we're looking at, and I've got a couple of other people with me at the moment. There's my boss there, Kay. Say hello.
Good morning, everyone.
And there's that other guy there as well.
Hello, people. How are you?
Yeah. Okay, we're sort of gradually now moving towards the summer night sky and so on, and the stars out there. And we've luckily had quite a few good nights lately, but unfortunately I haven't been able to spot this object here, the comet, yet. It always seems to be cloud in the region where it is. Yeah. Have you managed to spot it, Keith?
I thought I spotted it, but it just turned out to be a star.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, it's still time to have a look for it. Now, also, you might also notice when the sky gets dark, or begins to get dark, you can see a big bright star in the sky over towards the west. That's actually not a star at all. That's the planet Venus, okay, that's in our sky. So we're going to start off by looking at the south, looking towards the south, okay? And we're going to twilight. And then the stars begin to appear. Never realised I filmed one of those, did you? Well, the interesting thing, I suppose it's interesting to some degree, is that at this time of the year, the Milky Way lies along the southern horizon. So the night sky above our heads isn't so spectacular because the Milky Way is missing. And the Southern Cross, which you can see down there, reaches its lowest point in the sky. And there it is there. And always remember that we always identify the Southern Cross by the two stars that follow it round the sky.
The pointers.
Which we call the pointers, exactly. Yep. Okay. And, of course, this is our major navigation beacon. And the thing, actually, I always do, the moment I get out underneath the stars, is to orientate myself to work out where the Southern Cross is and so on. Okay. Now, rising in the east, we've got the constellation of Orion. All right. And you also might see in the region there another bright star is actually Jupiter is rising up there as near there as well. So Orion is our summer sign and it's just coming into our sky, while our winter sign, Scorpius, is setting in the west there. Now, all of these stars, of course, had great importance to the people who first colonised New Zealand. And the cross was known as Tipuna.
Tipuna, yeah.
Tipuna, and that means, Kay, the anchor, isn't it?
It is the anchor. I'm not too sure the exact translation of that, but it's always just known as the anchor.
Mm. Well, of great importance are three bright stars in our sky at the moment. You can see there we've got Sirius. It's not too far from away from Orion. That is the brightest star in the sky.
Yes.
And anything brighter than Sirius is no star, okay?
Yes, as in the planet Venus that you mentioned earlier. Mm. Venus is quite a bit brighter than Sirius, but Venus is a planet, not a star.
And sometimes Venus gets so bright it can be seen in broad daylight.
Yeah.
It gets that, We'll have a closer look at Venus in a later program. Mm. Then we've got, following up there, we've got Canopus. And that is the second brightest star in the sky. Right? And then following behind, on the other side of the cross, is Antares. Right, now I'm going to bring up the special names of these stars. You've got Aotahi.
Aotahi.
Right. Yes. See, Kay can pronounce it correctly.
Well, and slightly better, that's all.
And this star is the high chief of the southern skies, isn't it?
It's the sun of the sun.
Okay.
You know, the star we call the sun, which it marks daylight, that sun. It's the sun of the sun.
Right, okay. Mm. So that's
the highest ranking one, if you like.
Right. Okay. And then we've got Takarua.
Takarua, yeah. Takarua.
So I'll get it nearly right.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's the brightest star in the sky, yeah, okay. And then we got Rehua.
Rehua, yeah.
Okay, and the importance of this is that what you're actually looking at, folks, is you're looking towards the stars that you would see looking south, you know. near the beginning of the Maori New Year, right? And the great, this great panorama of stars along the horizon there was in fact the great waka in the sky, and there it is there.
People often wonder why the Southern Cross or the anchor of the waka is in the middle, but in these big, long voyaging canoes, they're always in the middle to keep the balance.
Oh, okay.
If you tift it over the front or the back, obviously, you kind of upset things a bit, yes. So it is actually in the correct position for sailing.
That's right,
waka, yeah. Even though that looks like a war waka there.
Yeah. So these are the stars you'd see at the beginning of the Maori New Year with the Milky Way lying along the horizon. This would be in the dawn sky. We're looking at them now, but many months later, we're seeing the same pageant of stars in the evening sky. And then it was said that the anchor was lifted up, wasn't it?
The anchor was lifted up by Aotahi, and then the waka would begin to sail through the sky.
So, okay, so the anchor is hauled up, and that's actually exactly what you'll begin to observe in the sky, because the Southern Cross at this point, which is the anchor, is its lowest point in the sky. And then after this, it begins to rise up into the sky. So looking at our southern sky, what would happen is it would lift up, right? And then we move into our southern
stars. It actually lifts up and turns over.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all the, you know, if you like, all the lesser stars take their positions in the sky.
Yeah. They fall out.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, right. Yeah. They fall out very regularly, though.
But always remember what I said before, folks. These, all the stories we have of constellations and things like that, this is all about knowledge, learning the stars in the sky, learning to be able to navigate by them and so on. Because we can always remember a good story.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things is that you'll find lots of versions of the waka, but the waka that is shown there is the complete waka, the whole thing. But when you're in different areas of New Zealand, some parts of it are not particularly usable, and so you find the waka's been reduced down in size.
Okay.
And is only part of that. But that is the, if you like, the cosmological waka, resetting the whole of the universe, if you like, at the beginning of the year. We're looking at it in the evening sky because the stars you see at one time of the year, 6 months later, you see in the evening. So if you see them in the morning, you're going to see them in the evening. That makes it a good teaching time.
Hmm. That's right, because obviously to see it in the dawn sky, you've got to get up very early in the morning. Right? But also the sky is gradually brightening.
That's
so you've
right.
got a very short period.
You can always find that's the sacred time because of the sun, the sun being so important to all of us.
Yeah.
So in the evening, you're not breaking any rules talking about things. You know, it's a lot more relaxed in that sense. Ordinary people can learn.
So anyway, folks, go outside. We'll go back to our spring sky. Go and identify the great waka, and you can, easy thing looking at that, you can see the front of the waka is that big curve of stars, which is, of course, a constellation of Scorpius over there, and then Orion is the stern. All right?
And all the stars you need, basically, for navigation are in the waka, you see.
Yeah.
So you're learning them then.
That's right, yeah. Once you identify those stars, you've got the basis, as Kay says, for navigation. Yeah. Mm. Okay, well, looking at our southern night sky, directly above the Southern Cross, you can see two faint patches of light, which look like detached portions of the Milky Way. These are the Magellanic Clouds, and in fact, nothing to do with the Milky Way at all. And this time of the year, in the early evening, they get to the highest point in the sky. So let's go in and have a little bit of a closer look. There they are there. And the best seen with binoculars, but then you bring it, this is what we can see with binoculars, but the telescope is even more. So we've got these two clouds, one's called the large and the other's the small, isn't that?
That's right. It's fairly obvious why.
Okay.
Occasionally they can be confused with clouds in our...
Genuine clouds.
In our atmosphere, in our night sky. But the distinguishing feature is, firstly, their position. They don't change their position according to the stars in the night sky. And the other thing, they have a very slight bluish tinge to their colour.
Mm.
And that's how you can tell that you're looking at these two Magellanic clouds.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned it before, folks, as Keith just mentioned colours. Your eye has got two different types of cells, the rods and the cones, all right? Now, the cones are what give you colour vision, right? The rods only give you black and white vision. However, they are far more sensitive. So when the light level gets very low, what happens is the cone cells begin to switch off, and what you're using is really the rods. So when you look up at night and you look at the stars, they all appear white, and that's because you're using the rods, which are the most sensitive. And, of course, as you may well know, that when you first look up at the night sky, you don't see all the stars you expect to see. Then as time goes on, over about a period, about 20 minutes, half an hour, you gradually see more and more stars. As your eye gets adapted to the darkness, more and more things switch on. Yes. So you've always got to remember this.
Including.
Yes. You've always got to remember this when you're out at night, that you've got to give your eyes that time to get adjusted to the dark. And what on earth is happening here, I don't know.
Yeah. Just keep switching it off.
That's right. Okay, so we've got the two Magellanic clouds here, and they are, in fact, satellite galaxies. You've got the large cloud there, which is just under 200,000 light-years away. Mm. I mean, this is some great distance. It contains about 20 billion stars, right? And then it's got a diameter just over 32,000 light-years. The smaller cloud is slightly more distant, nearly just under 200,000 light-years, a little bit smaller, but it's still got 3 billion stars. And what we do know from studying these things is that, yes, they are satellites of the Milky Way, but they're actually being torn apart by it and absorbed. And in fact, what we do know...
By the gravity of the Milky Way galaxy.
Is just tearing them apart. But what we do know with a large cloud, it was originally a spiral galaxy, a small spiral galaxy. In some respects, it was a barred spiral, which makes it look very similar to the Milky Way, if you could see it from the outside, but on a much smaller scale. Right? But as it's got closer and closer to the Milky Way, the gravitational tidal effects are gradually disrupting it, which also, if we go back, it generates an enormous amount of star formation. Now, you can see all those pink regions looking at that photograph. They're all where new stars are being formed, and the brightest is at the bottom there, bottom left. That's the Tarantula Nebula, and it's the most massive star-forming region that we can see at the moment. Yeah,
those pink areas indicate turbulence, don't they? And that's where dust and gas tends to coalesce.
Yeah,
into
but what you things. One of the pink regions is that the visible light is being absorbed and been re-emitted, right?
Yeah, but it is a turbulent area, isn't it?
Yeah,
you can imagine if you could see it, lots of eddies and
it's all charged
sort of
up
storms and things.
What we call Mission Nebula, And then the Tarantula there's over 100 stars which are more than a million times brighter than the Sun. So the biggest supercluster you can imagine is sitting there. And those stars will only last a few thousands of years because they're so energetic. So expect to see some massive explosions because these big stars do not end their life quietly. They do so in massive eruptions, which we call supernova. Keep an eye on that. And then you can also see with the small cloud, you can see it's got this tadpole shape. Again, it's been pulled apart. We're not quite sure what its original shape was. However, before we'll talk a little bit more about these galaxies, but if you look at the small Magellanic cloud, you can see that object there. I just pulled up. Right. It looks like an intense ball of stars, which in fact it is. But when we look out into space, we've got no way of judging distances. So here it looks like a part of the small Magellanic cloud or attached to it, but it's not. Remember, the small cloud's about 200,000 light years away. This object we're looking at is a hell of a lot closer. And it's actually called 47 Tucanae. And the reason for that is The Small Magellanic Cloud is in the constellation of the Toucan, and it's the 47th. This object is the 47th brightest star, because to people observing the stars a long time ago, they just saw 47 as a little tiny star.
So it's pretty faint when you look at it.
The 47th brightest star.
Yeah.
But when you actually look at it in a telescope, it's one of the most awesome objects.
Yes.
There's a photograph of it there.
Mm.
As you can see, its distance is 15,000 light years, which makes light's a long, long way away. Okay, but it's nowhere near the distance that the small cloud is. And the fascinating thing about this object is its age. Its age goes back to virtually the beginning of the universe, and it's one of the building blocks of the Milky Way galaxy. Galaxies, they believe now that these things, which we now call globular clusters, stars first formed in these clusters, these spherical clusters, which merged together to form the galaxies. And this one here, right, is just the one that was left over.
Those orange stars are ending their lives, aren't they? There.
That's right.
Yeah. It's interesting that most of them are towards the outside.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. As Kay says, you see, what happens with a star as it begins to age, a white star will then expand into what we call a red giant. It has that orangey colour. So the orange ones are the ones near the end of their life. We don't see many blue stars. There's one over the bottom right.
Would that be a foreground one?
It could possibly be, but I probably think not, because you're right inside, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's closer, I think. Oops.
It's doing that again.
Every time it makes that little noise, it does it.
What little noise?
Oh, you can't hear it. No. There's a little ding ding before.
Okay. So let's put these things you can spot with the eye, of course, but of course, with a pair of binoculars will help you a lot more. And of course, in a telescope, you begin to resolve this.
I can hear the ding ding.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Now, just to talk about. Our star is part of a galaxy which we call the Milky Way galaxy, of which we can only see a small part. Okay, and it's a giant galaxy, and it's doing it again. Sorry, folks. It's surrounded by lots of smaller galaxies, and our galaxy is part of a cluster of galaxies. All right, so you've got the Milky Way, the stars, which are great clusters in the Milky Way galaxy, but the galaxy itself is part of a cluster of galaxies. Yes. And it's called the local group because it's our cluster.
It's close to us.
Yeah. And there's about 80 of these galaxies, but most of them are little dwarf galaxies similar in size to the Magellanic Clouds. But they tend to be clustered around three giant galaxies, right? And in this diagram, we've got the Milky Way at the center. We'll bring the Milky Way up there. There it is. There's the Milky Way galaxy. It's not that the Milky Way is at the centre. It's just that we're at the centre of everything, aren't we, folks?
Yeah. That's what we think. We're important.
Yeah, we're measuring everything from that. But you've got these two other big bright galaxies there as well. This one here is M31, the great galaxy in Andromeda. Right? And over here, M33.
Triangulum galaxy.
The great galaxy in Triangulum. So you've got these three big galaxies, and they are the central points of clusters of smaller galaxies and so on. And the smaller galaxies, with the passage of time, it appears, gradually get absorbed by the larger galaxies. So there probably were a lot more once upon a time.
There seems a strange echo that the... it's very similar to the stars within the galaxy. Is a few incredibly bright, big, bright stars in any galaxy, and then there's a whole lot of the weeny little, small, dim stars.
Right, the smaller the star, the more common they are.
Exactly. And it's the same with the galaxies.
Yeah, the most common stars in the galaxy are red dwarfs, but not one can be seen without a telescope.
Mm.
They are the most common stars out there. And I would say it to me, it's a bit like looking across the African plains. You always see the elephants and the giraffes, but you miss out on all the millions of small creatures that are dancing
the
around.
The insects and all that's the little wee things.
That's what it's
mice
like.
Mice and stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, the interesting thing is that this time of the year, and we're looking to the north now, This is when you can see those two other galaxies, right, in the sky. So looking up there, the first thing directly north is the Great Square. There it is there. And it's made up of four reasonably bright stars, because it's an area away from the Milky Way, they stand out quite a bit. And rising up in the east, of course, is Matariki. Remember what I said earlier? You're looking at the stars you can see at the dawn of the new year. We're looking at the south now. As we move round to the east and north, we see Matariki rising. So that was, of course, the signal of a new year. And incidentally, folks, a lot of people think that's something that Maria brought in, but Maria brought it here, this tradition of starting the new year. But in fact, going backwards in time, thousands of years in time, the rising of these stars marked the beginning of the year for all the peoples of Europe and Asia.
Yeah, they certainly did. Japan.
Yeah.
Coming all the way down. And it Subaru, was actually in Greece.
Yeah.
Greece as well.
Yeah.
Subaru actually means joining, and it was five car companies that joined together to make Subaru.
Mm.
So right, they were referring to the joining.
So this was a tradition right the way across Europe and Asia. And then when the migrations into the Pacific began about 4,500 years ago, the people carried that tradition with them. So to this day, Maori say the beginning of the year is heralded by the rising of Matariki.
But that time in the year has been gradually shifting.
Because also, what was at the beginning of the year in the Northern Hemisphere is the complete opposite in the Southern Hemisphere.
It is here, but also with the fact that the moon gives the Earth a little bit of a pull and it creates a loop that we're doing, it is gradually moving through, just very gradually, one day every 71 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it is gradually, when you look back and you read something that's older, you've got to be careful to put things back. You can't just assume it's exactly the same as it is now.
Now, also in our sky at the moment, we've got the planet Saturn, a magnificent planet Saturn. Remember what I also said, that Jupiter will be rising up also in the east. So Jupiter will be joining Saturn in the sky. Right? And then looking down, just underneath the Great Square is M31.
And this is the galaxy we were looking at earlier.
Yeah, and this is the most distant object that can be seen with the human eye. When you see that, you're looking back around about 3 million light years. In other words, you're looking 3 million years backwards in time. Right? Yeah.
Whereas distance equals time in this sense.
That's right. Well, imagine somebody out there in the M31 looking at our galaxy. If they saw our sun, and if their technology was great enough to see our planet, but they see the Earth as it was 3 million years ago.
Yes.
And we weren't very technological then, were we?
Not that we know of, that's for sure.
Okay, so that's M31. That can be seen with the unaided eye, but you need a clear, dark sky and a good horizon. But there it is there, a great galaxy. It's got a trillion stars. And just up here is another hazy patch of light. Now, you're probably not going to see with the unaided eye, but you certainly will pick it up with a pair of binoculars. There's M33. Now, M31 is a little bit bigger and brighter than our galaxy. M33 is a little smaller. But that's a spiral galaxy too. And there it is there. Right?
It's beautiful, isn't it? It's got a lot of starbursts in those pink patches.
So we got these three galaxies surrounded by about 80 others that we know of.
And by the way, for the record, our galaxy has about 100 billion stars.
Yes. And look, this local group in turn, this little cluster of galaxies is in fact a satellite of an even bigger cluster of galaxies known as the Great Virgo cluster.
Supercluster,
But we'll look at that in later time. But do go out, folks, see if you can find Andromeda. It always used to be a challenge for me. When I come from England, of course, and it comes virtually overhead in England, Andromeda, and it's quite easy to see on a dark night. Here it's not so easy because it's near the horizon.
I can hear George, our Greek person in the astronomical society, saying Andromeda.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah, so there they are. That's where to look Find the great square and just look beneath them.
You're talking about the Subaru cluster. It's actually pronounced Subaru.
Subaru, yeah.
Yes, that's where the Japanese pronounce it, but we pronounce it Subaru.
Yeah. Yes. I know. But you find that with so many words, people pronounce them incorrectly.
We did a whole program once on Don't Tell It Like I Do or something. Which is all the mispronunciations.
Yeah, we should probably do that sometime.
It's funny for astronomers. I don't know if the general public would kind of get the point. Except that there's, pretty confusing listening to people and
but you're
their
quite
pronunciation.
Right. Andromeda, the leader of men.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That annoying thing's doing that again. Anyway, folks, just to cap up, and look, we're going to have to shut up in a moment anyway because we've got a big bunch of school kids out there who want to get in here, so we better leave the place for them. At the moment, the Stonehenge is open from Wednesday to Sunday, so we're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays, except for private bookings. But the rest of the time, we're open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Do check the web page, because if for some reason we do have to shut, then it will be on the web page.
Yeah. That's right, because certain things come up.
You don't want to travel a long distance and find that afterwards that it was on the web page.
So you can do a trek, or you can do guided tours. You can book guided tours in and so on. There's me doing a guided tour there at Stonehenge, and we tell all the stories of looking backwards in time, the origin of our civilization, and how our ancestors used the stars for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Okay. And we also do Star Treks. And if you want to do that, you come out and it has to be a group booking, but we'll take you around the night sky and pick out all the bright stars.
You can have just two people in a sense, but you must book it in. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Okay, folks, we're going to finish off now because we've got this big bunch of kids coming in. I think they're already here, aren't they, from what I got here? And we'll catch you up in the near future.